Hey, start. Hey, Jeff, one up here then.
Well, Liz is here.
Oh, there's Liz. Hollywood.
Liz lost her seat.
Yeah.
She always had to make an entrance, you know, fancy glasses. Where's your entourage?
I don't know. Someone needs to get fired, I guess.
All right, it's 1:30. We have a quorum. I want to welcome our guest and really want to welcome Troy back. Good to see Troy. I think he got, looks good from last time we saw you. That's good. I'm glad he's feeling good again. First off, we want to approve the minutes for the last meeting. They're in your packet.
I make a motion. I move to approve.
Motion. Second.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? So moved. Officers, Jeff, anything?
No, sir.
Liz?
No.
Bruce, you have anything? Jim? Jeff?
No, sir.
Tim? Troy, you have anything? That's just the way it goes, right? You gotta find out. Cool. All right, any unfinished business, Debbie?
No.
Okay. Don't need appeals cases, Bruce.
I have four. First one, special exception, 480, an application submitted by Betty Ream for a special exception to place a single wide mobile home on her property located at 589 North Glade Road, tax map 59, parcel 133, grid 9, and is zoned by residential 1.
What's there now?
There's an old house. It's kind of dilapidated. She's an elderly lady. She's wanting to put this mobile home behind the house and then tear the house down. There's also a trailer on her adjoining property that she is dismantling and removing. So all in all, that's going to
upgrade the property.
Yes.
Yeah. Anybody have any comments on this one? I mean, I don't know. What's the? There's nothing that you can stop the trailer from. You have to allow this, right, by law?
It's a special exception.
Special exception.
There's certain criteria in there. Right. Talks about visibility from the lake and different things that the board is supposed to look at when they review trailers. There's a specific section dealing with that.
Anybody have any concerns
with
this?
Right on the lake.
No.
Okay.
It's not. It's where Beckman's Peninsula Road turns down off of North Glade. You just go a little further out North Glade, and it's on the left-hand side of the road. It's actually pretty well screened with trees and so forth already. And I told her prior to this not to cut any of that down because it might be necessary.
Any other concern? Pass it on down then.
Okay. Second is variance 793, application submitted by Ali Dilmagani for a variance to build a home on his property to within 2 feet of the rear property line. And that property is located at 3117 Lakeshore Drive, tax map 50, parcel 203, lot 60, grid 19. And that's like residential 1.
Anybody have any? I mean, I just keep asking myself, why 2 feet? I mean,
right.
What's the rear property line? Neighbor or state?
It's the lake. And I believe they have the buy down.
I mean, that you're always, I mean, you're always over on the buy down anyway when you're working on it. You have anything about this, Bill?
I think it's, you know, the question in my mind is how deep the lot is to begin with, you know, or, you know, how steep it is, or
I don't know how far back that is. 3117, that'd be,
that's pretty close to
3 miles.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's within half a mile of 219 coming from, you know, that way. So it could be pretty steep in there.
Yeah.
which may be why they're...
It is pretty steep, actually. Closer to Lake Shore Drive, it's a little steeper, and it starts to slide up. I have a site plan if anyone wants to see it.
How close to the lot? I mean, the house must be fairly close to the back line anyway, isn't it?
Actually, that is the existing house right there.
So they're proposing to put the new house in front of this house, basically, what do you...
That house is going to come down.
Right, that's what I mean, take this house down and put...
This is the new one.
You're looking at here, see how it comes back here. This is the lakefront.
You can see these, each represent 10 feet in drop, so...
I'll pull passes around, I mean, we'll move on to something. What do you think? It's just the fact that the lot, the house gets longer, and they're pushing it forward, I mean, it's a pretty good sized house they're putting in. I don't know how...
I just know some of those are really...
It looks like there's plenty, if that's steep, to get back, yeah, to get back to, let it back in the wall, you know? But I think, in that case, you'd have a hard time proving hardship, I just...
Right, and that's what we're...
I mean, they got to prove that there's something really difficult to do there. Because the design of the house, if it was, if the house, the body of the house came back and put the toward the smaller part towards the front, it'd be a lot easier to do. But there's not, I mean, you'll just have, when it comes down to you guys, you'll just have to decide if what the hardship is. Maybe you want to add anything to this, or... Send it on down then.
You're saying this is 10 feet each?
Next up is variance 794, application submitted by David Mazuka for a variance to build a home on his property to within 12 feet of the rear line and a deck to within 4 feet of the rear line. Property is located at 1399 Marsh Hill Road, tax map 50, parcel 111, grid 7, and is also Lake Residential 1.
That's on down past the chair 5, right, going down?
Yes.
Is that one of those?
There's an existing small brick home on the property that's going to be a tear down.
Okay, is it, is that one of those ones that has, remember the dual lots? Is that the lot in the front and the lot in the back, is that just, is that one of those? Remember how they had those lots that were in front on some of those places along here?
Buy-down lots.
The old buy-down.
The old buy-down.
Yeah.
That's not, this isn't one of those, this has a regular buy-down.
This does have a buy-down.
Yeah, because I mean, that was, anything's a lot simpler, really. And again, they're looking to get closer to the lake, right?
Yes.
Okay, and this, again, talking about hardship on that, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, so. Anybody has any comments on this? So if we can get back and add it to it, I'm just saying, if you look at these drawings and see anything we can add. Let's go to number four then.
Well, this is going to sound really familiar, that VR 795 application submitted by Joseph and Michelle Nang for a variance to build a home on their property to within 11 feet of the rear line and a deck to within 3 feet of the rear line. And this property is located at 1239 Lake Shore Drive, tax map 57, parcel 233, grid 12, and is Lake Residential 1 as well.
Yep, that is very familiar.
I'm a little more, I guess when you, I mean, variances are variances, but when you get down to 2 foot or whatever, I think it makes it a little bit tougher for me to agree with, but as long as it's not, as long as it follows the rules.
This site plan for that one.
Yeah, it's one of the real narrow lots, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those real narrow lots. Sometimes that's difficult to get. Okay, now if you have any comments, if not, we'll move on to something else.
my comments.
Looks like you guys got your hands full, Bruce.
Yes. Missed a good one last month.
Yes, you did.
Jeff, you have any comment?
No.
All right. Karen, here's a copy of the ordinance. Do you have the final?
I got one.
Okay, very good. All right, moving on to Chad, right?
Yep.
Subdivisions and extension letter, right?
Yeah, I just handed that one out. Craig Ingram's office brought this to my attention. We classed our office approved back in 2006, but it never been recorded. Subdivision ordinance says if the lot's not recorded within 10 years, it's void unless there's a written extension granted by the planning commission. I checked with Kerry Schultz, who did the plat, and also talked to Steve Sherrard. Neither of them had any issues with it, and I looked over it, didn't see anything that really changed, so I think all the information on the plat is still valid.
Anybody get a chance to look at me? Any problem with this?
None of our ordinances have changed since then, or requirements?
No, I don't think anything's changed. Everything looks good.
Still meets all the...
Yeah, it meets all the requirements. I didn't have any issues. It was just a kind of technicality ordinance that we recorded within 10 years. And this was approved in 2006.
Okay, I need a motion on this.
Move to approve an extension.
Move to approve the extension. Second.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? So moved.
Do we want to put a time limit on that? I mean, I think they're going to proceed, but should I?
What do you feel comfortable with?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're planning on doing this, but we should probably stay if we want 5 years or if we want to.
That's what I thought. 5 years would be probably more than enough. You know. Everybody okay with 5 years on this? Jim, I see your mind.
Why would they ask if they're going to wait 5 years?
I agree.
I'm just thinking as I phrase the letter, I should probably put a written extension has been granted for a certain time period.
That's fine.
Okay, good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
No.
Okay, comprehensive plan update.
Okay. So, thank you to everybody who read this, reviewed this, and gave me comments. I do want to just stress to you, according to the Open Meetings Act, whenever I send you these, and I do want your comments back, please don't hit reply all. Only hit reply, because when you reply all and you're sharing comments amongst each other, that constitutes a meeting. So let's just give me the comments and then I'll bring them here to review publicly. So just keep that in mind whenever we do this, because we're just going to continue to do this throughout the comp plan process. So I got a lot of responses. Most everybody said everybody was okay with this. Tim had a number of things that he had put out. I've got them here. He noticed a number of typos. I noticed them too, and thank you very much, Tim, for that. He did see an error in some sentences that had to do with ensuring that it stated that the towns were zoned. So we passed that along. He also said on table 2.6 that he felt that they should be arranged in a consistent fashion with the largest to smallest amounts. Part of the table was arranged that way. The bottom half was not. So that was passed on. He had a question about numbers, and so we're reviewing the numbers on that. They didn't seem to be quite right. Those were numbers that had to do with existing and new housing units. And he had a question about LR2, which I think was just a confusion about the differences between LR2 and LR1. So, Tim, did we properly, as an office, address all your concerns?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Wanted to make sure we did that.
Well, I was the only one interested, you know.
So is LR2 designated for public sewer or no public sewer? Is that the question?
He's not. LR1 is. LR2 is not.
That was my confusion.
Well, there was one spot where LR2 said designated for public sewer, and then
Right, that was that section where you had said...
2.1.5. Yeah.
3, yeah. And Tim had said that he had thought they were planned for public sewer, and they're not planned for public sewer. Only LR1 is.
Okay.
All right. So, what happened was, sent it out to all of you at the same time. I also sent it out to Dave Cotton, who is our Department of Planning rep for regionally, and he looked at it. He called me, and most of his changes were minor, but he did caution that we need to expound on the industrial and commercial enterprises that are planned along US 219 North. And I completely agree with him, but I want to explain to you why that is. Whenever we do a development, whether we need to add infrastructure or we're doing a spec building or whatever it is, and there's any chance at all that we're going to need state funding, we want to make sure it's in the plan. Otherwise, we might not get the funding.
You're talking about the Michelle Building in McHenry?
No, I'm actually talking, he specifically was looking at US 219 North and the Moran property, where the new breakout road is going to happen and eventually connect all the way up to Johnstown. Where they're building that now, there's a big piece of property on the left-hand side owned by Tom Moran, and there was a preliminary plat about a year ago maybe that had some plans for commercial development, industrial development, and some residential development. So he wanted that spelled out more specifically. Yeah,
there.
He wanted that spelled out more specifically. Now, one of the things that you can get trapped in is that you talk to a lot of people at the state level, you get to know them and you're comfortable, but if the administration changes and all the people change, and then you've lost that connection, and if it's not in writing, then you can end up in trouble. So he just wanted to emphasize to put that in, and if there's other developments that we know about in the future, please make sure they're in there. It covers your
Can we, I should know and I don't, is the I-68 219 interchange, is that designated, has that been identified as a growth area for commercial and industrial growth?
Yes. Well, at least
including this, that's property on the southeast corner.
I'll have to look. I'm not sure about that one because part of that was ag or rural resource, one or the other. So
that
might need.
That we're trying to.
Yeah, you had mentioned that to me before. I'll have to revisit that. I know the Moran property is employment center, but we had run into issues when we needed to get permitting for the road because our PFA went to the center of the line and not all the way over. Little things like that just kill us sometimes. So we need to be careful.
Hey, Jim, when they say it's going to be completed, do they say?
Next year, I think. Is it late next year?
I think so.
Better make a pretty good progress, that's why.
I think by fall of next year is what they were looking at, I think.
Well, that's a great way to get to Somerset now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Dave, like I said, he did this over a phone call. I asked him to write it all down because I was on vacation at the time and I didn't think my brain would remember all of that. And I haven't gotten all that in writing. So as soon as I get it, we'll be back and forth with AECOM making sure those things get added. The other thing that's still going on with the land use section is future growth areas. So I reached out to all the towns. Most all of them did not want to change their growth areas from the last time, but Grantsville did, Oakland did, and Deer Park wanted to add. Deer Park didn't have a growth area last time, but they want to add one now. Oakland is done, I believe. Grantsville, we're just looking for some clarification on them to make sure our mapping is correct. And Deer Park, I haven't gotten an official submission from them. You've probably seen it in the paper, but I've reached out to him and I haven't gotten anything officially, so I'm going to set a deadline for him by the end of, I think, end of August, mid-September, to try to get something in so we can get the proper mapping in the draft. Okay. Any questions about the land use chapter? We're going to keep hashing through it, and I'll keep bringing it back until we're all comfortable with it. Okay, so we also got in and you don't have this in your hands yet, and you won't yet, the housing section. As you will recall, we are breaking the comprehensive plan into three major sections: sustainable environment, vibrant economy, and thriving population. Housing is in the thriving population section. So what happens is AECOM will bring me, send me this ugly draft. It's not in the format, it's not got the pretty pictures, it's not where, how it's gonna look, but we pore through it as a staff to look at the numbers, to look at the mapping, to make sure everything's good, and then we send it back. They put it in the proper format, I give it to you, I give it to Dave Cotton, and then we hash through it ourselves, and hopefully when you guys are done, then it's ready for public consumption. So that's the process. In going through this, though, one of the first things that I came across was a recommendation from AECOM, which reminded me that our population growth scenario needed to be updated. So I've handed that out. Everybody should have it. It looks very much the same, but as you might recall, I did this at the in the midst of 2016 is the first time I showed it to you. So it wasn't showing the last couple years, so I added them in. So I want to bring this to your attention. So last time it ended right there. And I said, it's probably going to level out, but how it's going to level out, we don't know. But remember, this spike was because of the sprinkler law that came in and everybody rushed in and got permits, and then the big drop was because everybody got their permits the year before, so they didn't need. So we had dropped off to a very low number of permits at that location. And the guess on our part was we went from 200 permits down to 40-some permits. What's it going to be? Where's it going to level out? And you will note that it did begin leveling out. See where I put it in the actual text here. On page 2, I added this paragraph. 2017 and 2018 saw a recovery from the anomaly, with new housing starts rebounding to 85 in 2017 and 111 in 2018. And as of this year, we just looked at this week, we had 61 housing starts. Same time last year was 68. So it would indicate that we might not quite get to 111. We're in the height of building season right now, but it should be probably somewhere between 100 and 110 by the end of this year. So that would indicate that that's where we're gonna end up, somewhere in there, on this trend of leveling off and getting some consistency. I also added, that probably helps blowing that up, huh? The latest population trends, they continue to go down, and that is more than unfortunate. And the fact that MDP, as I suspected, would have to revisit based on our estimations from census going down as well. They had us at nearly 32,000 residents by 2040, and so they have now revisited that and are saying 31,450. So some growth in population, they think, by 2040, but not a whole lot. But you see where the trend is right now, which we have discussed numerous times. We'd like to see that change. What a lot of people downstate don't understand is if they see the increased new housing units, they think the population is probably increasing at the same time, but it's not, because around 40% of all our new housing units are at the lake, and they're not full-time residents.
What percent?
Around 40. Usually falls between 30 and 40%. So,
the WISP in that 40 or not? What's WISP going on top of the map? Is that in the 40?
Yes. Yeah, those are included there. And actually, that number is calculated based on the watershed. So anything that's in the watershed gets thrown in there. And part of that, there's a section of that that's not in the watershed, so that wouldn't be counted. So I also updated, most of this is the same, I updated our subdivisions. This was already good.
Debbie, before we go further on the population thing, this is still subject to edit or change, or?
Yes.
You know, you talk about it, and you talk about steady rise in the 65-plus age group.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Would you consider putting that chart in there that shows the median age, you know, 70, 80, 90? It really calls that out, where the median age in 1970 was like 28, and the median age now is like 46 or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a big issue.
It is.
For the county. And you mentioned in here that the number of school-aged children were declined by approximately 700. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You might also add in here that the number of, and Kim can give you this, but the number of, the number of deaths has been greater than the number of births for like 10 or 12 years now, which explains a lot of what's happening. And the one place where the housing is tied to population is for people that are retiring to live in their vacation home or building a retirement home here. That's part of, I mean, you talk about that in here, but that's, to me, the demographics are going to be a really, really big challenge for us as you look ahead. It's a challenge now, but if you look 40 years from now in terms of people in the workforce and all that sort of thing, it's going to be a big challenge.
So on the table here, add the median age chart. Add,
I mean,
mention of
that. I mean, it's it, because it does kind of point out what's happening with the age.
Right. Also add mention of number of deaths exceeding number of births for the past 10 to 12 years. And
verify that with Kim, if you, yeah. Or you can look it up, I guess.
No, I'm not a fan of repeating what's already been done, so if she's already done it, just go over there.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you see that trend changing at all?
I don't.
I mean, if we sat here right now, what would you do to try to change it?
I'll tell you what will change it. People, my wife laughs at me when I say it gets mad at, short of some man-made or natural disaster in a large metropolitan area, Pittsburgh, Washington, somewhere else, it's not going to change. It's the same trend in most rural areas. And the census will tell us a lot, but I read somewhere in the last census that like 80% of rural counties lost population. The 20% that gained population were contiguous to a large metropolitan area where people could commute into work. So it's probably not going to change, and the population in rural areas is going to continue to age. The number of school-aged children is going to continue to decline. I don't know where it bottoms out or flattens out. I don't know where that happens at. But it's a big, big issue when you start looking at the economy and lots of, in terms of what services are going to be required. And then, you know, I think we all know we have some big businesses, some large, by our standards, large businesses right now that would like to expand. They can't find people to work. That's not going to change. So it's either going to be AI, artificial intelligence, or automation, or something. And most of the rural counties where population, where there's been population growth, is in minorities, and we don't have minorities. So to answer your question, I don't see it changing.
I'm just asking everybody. I mean, anybody's opinion can. But there's a place in Front Royal, Virginia called Ferguson Supply. It's a warehouse. It's 150,000 square feet. And inside that warehouse, there's 150 people working. And all it does is just distribute all the Ferguson supplies up and down the East Coast or whatever. And I keep thinking, why can't we in one of these industrial parks pull something like that? Because it doesn't make any difference where it is, because the trucks are coming to get it. And they're taking it to Winchester. With the roads we have now, we should be able to get to some of these places in, you know, an hour and a half. I mean, Front Royal, Virginia is closer to D.C., mm-hmm. but it's also still 2 hours away from Winchester, an hour and a half from Winchester, you know what I mean, or whatever.
Well, they have the inland port that's pretty close by there.
I mean, like I said, but I'm saying that's the kind of stuff. With all the improvements to the airport and everything,
Well, you're starting to see some of that now, like with Total Biz Fulfillment. I mean, they've maxed out in Grants Hill, they've maxed out in Mountain Lake, and they're renting space in Allegheny County.
That's great, but I'm just saying, there's not enough, but I guess...
No. And it's a north-south highway. If that ever gets fully developed, like we've talked about, then you'll see more of that.
Because I look over at Somerset, you pull into Somerset, and there's an industrial park there. And they've got a UPS, you know, they got... Well, Somerset, well, there's not any different, you know, in Garrett County, but yet they have those, and it's all jobs. You know, it's the people working there. I mean, there's, like I said, there's five or six different companies inside, name companies, you know, that are inside that industrial park.
My question, and Jim, you would have a better feel for this than I think anybody else, but do you see any potential where the school systems will maybe start to reemphasize things with trades to where kids are using their hands again for other things other than using their cell phone? Because to me, that's one of the reasons why the population is dropping in areas, because school systems have been driven into this mode of, you know, trying to compete against the world in school. And, you know, you see these programs being dropped left and right, and the kids being basically pushed into, you got to go to a four-year school or you're not going to make it. And instead of saying, you know, hey, wait a minute, maybe that isn't the best thing for you, and try to emphasize other things where they can...
What's killing Garrett is the fact that it's online education you get now. You know, a lot of these kids can stay at home and take the courses. I mean, Garrett's one of the nicest facilities now around. It's almost getting up with Hagerstown and some of the other, with that STEM Research Center and the new performing arts coming and the gymnasium and all that stuff. And every time I walk in there, I get frustrated because there's only 500 students there. That just blows my mind. And the programs, like you said, the programs, they keep cutting out. They're cutting out because of numbers, Bill. You know,
well, I was talking more of the high school thing.
Well, what I'm saying, but it could right. Break to the junior college, you could go to the program too. I'm talking about, there was a time when the building trades, you know, we had to weld and we did that building in an accident. All of a sudden you have building trades, you have plumbing, electrical, you had welding, you had all that
right,
stuff.
Everybody's trying to find people to work.
Right, exactly.
And most of them aren't skilled enough to do the jobs right. They need them to do.
Exactly.
Would be interesting to see how the vocational centers at each high school, how those numbers have changed over the last 10 or 15 or 20 years.
I think it'd be a good idea to invite Paul Edwards to come to one of our meetings to talk about that. I think there was a day when I think the education system, including everything from the classroom up through the principals, pushed people to go to college to get a four-year degree. That was supposed to be the answer for everybody. I think they are realizing, or have realized, that college isn't for everybody, A, and B, you can make a good living in the trades. If you're an electrician, a plumber, whatever you want, you can make more than college graduates in many cases. And so I think we recognize that in the county scholarship program with colleges, when in 2009 we added the trades part of that says you get your CDL, your welding certificate, or whatever. So I think we're okay on the post high school side, but still back in the schools. I think that's part of what's being looked at in this Kerwin Commission that they're talking about, because they've gone to Germany and lots of other countries and looked. And in Germany, basically, I think you decide in right or wrong, you decide in like the fifth or sixth grade what you're going to do. And a big part of that is what I call trade training, you call it vocational training,
right.
Whatever you
right.
want. But part of this thing we have with demographics, and you're right, is people that can do those kind of things are going to be more and more in demand. You go to a large metropolitan area, and I may have told the story where I was in a meeting one day with a guy. It was an important meeting. And he got up to leave, and he's leaving. He said he had an appointment with the plumber. And we're like, plumber, what the hell? And he said, well, it took me a month to get him there. And if I'm not there when he shows up, then I'll be lucky if I get there the next time.
Well, so. I can just tell you one of the things just from doing the WGW charity event, a lot of the money that we're raising is going back into the schools for programs that
the school isn't funding as much as they used to, things with arts and along those lines, you know, that we get those kind of requests all the time now. So, you know, I'm just wondering at some point, I'd hope to see more of an emphasis on the next generation of at least trying to encourage kids to, if they're that good with this,
yeah,
then they can certainly do some other stuff with their hands.
Yeah.
Well,
and not to drag it out, but if the number here where it says 700 fewer school-age children, that has a big impact right now, because the schools are operating now at 60% capacity. They've got 40% more space than they need. And I understand nobody wants to close a school or anything, but if you take another 700 kids out of that system, and you know, if you decide you want to do something, like if at some point in time the county decided they want to have one high school, well, it takes 10 years to go through that process to get the money and get a school built. I'm not saying either way, but
doesn't happen.
Well, I can tell you that's where we're going to be in 20 years. I'll be very surprised if we're not down to one school, because we can't continue to raise taxes to pay for infrastructure that we don't really need. At least I don't think we can. That we don't really need. And to your point, Paul will tell you right now that they cannot offer some things at each of the high schools because they don't have enough students to make it practical. On the other hand, I'm talking about it, the AP courses and other stuff. On the other hand, if they were all in one place, they could have a lot, they could offer a lot of things that they can't offer right now. And I'm not trying to get into a discussion about closing schools or whatever, but my point being, again, the demographics. I don't think we spend enough time studying and understanding the demographics and being realistic about where we are and where we're headed. That's my point.
Well, I think a big component of pushing the trades essentially in high school too is to say, you know, let's look at student loan debt, because let's be honest, it's going to be a big problem in our country. You have kids coming out of college with 4-year degrees, $100,000 in debt, that can't get jobs. So, I mean, I think that that's an interesting part that also makes it more attractive to sell those trades and keep kids in our county.
I saw a documentary last week, and they were talking about a lot of really smart kids have started to go to trade schools because their debt will be like $30,000 leaving. Mm-hmm. And they'll have a job in a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
They're off and running, and, you know, can have it paid off in a couple of years.
Well, see, the school board used to have a pretty decent relationship with Garrett, because remember when I used to teach the trades, Lauren Bowser would build houses back in here, Mountain Lake Park or someplace, then I'd bring my group in at night, and we would do, say, the mechanicals or whatever, drywall, whatever, you know me? And that worked out. That was great, because that gave you a chance to teach somebody. And a lot of people have moved on to work for, you know, working in the county now for many years. But I don't think that, you know, I don't think that coordination there the way it used to be. Because that's kind of nice, because Lauren did a nice job of getting that. Northern had their program where they built a couple houses,
right.
Excuse me. You know, stuff like that. So
kind of fell out of favor, and so now it's, people go like, oops, that was a bad move.
Yeah. All right, so we added that into the good discussion on that. So.
It is, and I'm making notes to myself. The first notes were about the additions that Jim wanted. Other notes, I want to make sure I double check the school age children's loss number to make sure that that's up to date. I didn't look at that when I was updating everything else. Talked to AECOM about how to emphasize the demographics, and I'm going to tell them to make sure they listen to this recording so that they can get valuable information for the education section. And do you want to invite Paul Edwards to the next meeting to talk about vocational?
Can he be?
I mean, if you're interested, he'd be the one to address it. He's the one that runs those programs for the school board. But
yeah, go ahead and invite him. That's fine.
Yes.
That'd be good. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nods.
Everybody okay,
yes,
with that?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
All right. Okay. We'll do. Okay. So, I will, oh, no, we're not done yet. So subdivision numbers added the last 2 years. I did not change the text because the text basically said that the final year seemed to indicate a leveling of activity. It goes up slightly, but I think it's a leveling of activity after all the dropping. It seems to be, the uptick is so small, I don't think we need to change the text unless you disagree with me. Nope. Tony's laughing because I'm just listening to you in my head going, I never disagree with you, Debbie.
Some of this stuff, some of this stuff just, kind of like, I don't know. I know it has to be done, but it's just.
Yeah.
And it's related to infrastructure. The other thing is those numbers talk about how many units can be built or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Water is gonna be at some point here an extremely critical resource. You may have the land area to build that many units, but you may not be able to get a permit depending on where it is. If it's on public, because there is a limited capacity. We just ran into that not long ago. And, we're trying to extend the Therapeville water system down and tie it into McHenry and develop the Hoy Run wells, but it could get to the point where you're limited in what you can build where you're on the public water system because of the capacity of the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't have to factor that in here. I guess you can't, but.
You can't really, but we do try to make a statement. One of my pet peeves, and I think I've said this before, is the development capacity, which has to be in here. It's a requirement where MDP does a development capacity. It's the build out. If everything was built that's currently vacant, how big is that number? And
well, that's what I'm talking about.
It's not realistic. So I tend to add language that says it's not realistic and why. But we have to include it. They cannot factor in for not being able to get a perk. Yeah.
It could be water and sewer, not just water. Sewer's
The perk will kill you on a lot of the stuff. So, for subdivisions anyway. So just because the land's vacant doesn't mean it's buildable. And they can't calculate that into the state numbers. So that's why we do our own analysis. That's why this exists, and I went full geek to make it, because relying on state numbers would not be accurate.
One thing, Deb, when you say in there there's going to be, I don't mean to beat this to death, but when you say there's going to be 700 fewer students,
mm-hmm.
we need to make sure that that's a
accurate number,
yes. That it, and know where it comes from, because somewhere along the line that's going to be challenging.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that came from Census or MDP, but I'm sure it came from one of them, but I will double check that. The reason why I got kicked into going full geek and redoing this was because AECOM made a recommendation. As you might recall, I presented this and I said that a moderate growth scenario would anticipate 100 new units per year. These are new residential units through 2040. Rapid growth scenario was 200, and you guys had originally said let's stick with the 100, and then we came back because things were so dismal at the time and said let's drop that to 75 units. AECOM and I both, on the basis of redoing this, are recommending to go back up to 100 units. Discussion?
I mean, I think that's more realistic than, I mean, you have something to go. 110 here, so I think that's a good number. No, you ever mean 100 seems like a good number. Don't you? I mean, that's about what the average is.
That's what I'm recommending. We were 111 last year. We're probably going to be just over 100 this year. So
I think it's high.
Do they take into account the houses that get torn down and get rebuilt?
These are just new construction, new residential construction.
I think it's high because you've got an economy that's very best right now, which could change. Building costs are really high, which is going to limit the number of people here that can build, that live here, and you know, at this point, you're kind of running low on lakefront properties that can be built on, unless they're, like Jeff just said, tearing them down and starting over, and if you're not counting that, that's if you build.
But you said you are counting that as part of the 100?
Yeah.
The rebuild?
No, it's only vacant to new.
Because the ones we went over this morning, what was it, two of them? At least two, the last two were rebuilt.
Those are, in one case anyways, are rebuilt, so that doesn't count according to
this. There was two rebuilds, and one was taking them, bringing a mobile home in.
That's not factored in.
That's a net zero.
I think that market is probably more likely to see more and more of those, because there's not many vacant pieces of property left around the lake, and you know, you got a boom going on top of the mountain right now with them building, but that's not, I don't know how sustainable that is.
I would bring up the proposed new housing development in Grantsville, right? North of Grantsville. I don't know much about that. But that's not at the lake.
That could certainly help some, but I mean, I don't know what the numbers are. I don't know what the
I don't know
fully built out capacity, but I don't know what it is. I don't think we know at this point. I mean, Community Action is doing their, they got approval for the money for Chautauqua, is that what Wayne calls it?
Yes.
It goes out behind Liberty News and to the river. I mean, that's a big project. I don't know if those would be, I don't know how those would be counted, but.
They would be new units.
But that's funded and
they
that's
would count into
done.
It.
I'm fine leaving it with 100. All right, Bill, I don't think it's going to get there.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just right.
What
I mean,
would you think?
I agree with
you.
I'm saying we got to have a number.
Yeah, 100's fine.
Leave it at 100. That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. So that is the last of my notes on the comp plan. My office will finish the review of the housing section. I'll send it to AECOM to get reformatted, and then we'll send it out to you and Dave Cotton for comments. Okay.
You do the action on this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything else on the comp plan? All right, moving to the public hearing part of our meeting. And like I said, I think people have a copy of that. I don't think any of the sign committee, Karen left. I think she was on the sign committee.
She in the hallway, she leave.
Okay. So Karen was one of the sign committee. We want to thank them for the job they did, because it was a thankless job anyway. So anybody have any? I guess I'm going to turn it over to Debbie again. She can go over the highlights of it.
Okay.
Not a whole lot of comments, I don't see.
Oh, we'll get to that. I don't think there was any. So, if anybody does not have a copy of the draft sign chapter, it is right there in front of Tony. So, as an overview, you guys created the sign committee. They started in November, worked diligently through March, generally two meetings a month, but a couple months we hit it harder than that and got three or four in. Then we took a hiatus after March to have the lawyer drafted up, Mike Getty, met again the end of June and the beginning of July and presented it to you guys in July. None of you had any edits on it, you felt comfortable pushing it out and going ahead and scheduling this public hearing today. So it was placed online. The document was placed online. It was made available to read hard copy in my office and in the Oakland Library. It was advertised in the newspaper online and on the radio for at least 2 full weeks, in some cases more. I have not had any written or oral comments. I had a phone call to ask about it the other day. The gentleman said he might come, but he didn't come. So And that was all I've heard about it. So obviously, as you recall, there were four, you may or may not know. So there were, this all started due to two amendment requests to the sign chapter, one for temporary flags or temporary signs and one for LED signs. And because of a Supreme Court decision that said that we could not identify or regulate signs by reading them. So all reference in the document had to be to real estate signs or exceptions of any kind for certain kinds of signs, temporary signs, no trespassing signs, things like that. You couldn't put any of that in the document anymore. It all had to be stripped out. So, and since we have also had another court decision that has shaped how we did this document, it was in our district, I don't know if that's proper terminology, Liz, but in our jurisdiction that we fall under their case law. And it said that it was a violation of free speech to regulate the number of signs on a residential property. So, bearing all that in mind, the poor sign committee had to sort through all of that. We reformatted it. They were under specific guidance from the Planning Commission to look at the Reed versus Town of Gilbert Supreme Court ruling, to look at temporary signage, to look at LED signs, and to look at sign height regulations. So the draft addresses all of those. I'm not going to get into specifics unless somebody asks me for specifics, and then I'll be more than happy to address them. And that's the overview.
Any comments from the planning?
Question. Mm-hmm. Deb, is your comment period still open?
It will be open. The Planning Commission can set up comments to still come in for a certain period of time after this is done.
For how long?
As long as they want.
When do we have to have the commissioner not to have a public hearing, right?
They'll have to hold their own. Right. The commissioners, when they do it, they tend to have at least 2 weeks, sometimes a month of comment period. Depends on how controversial
the thing
is.
So you want to give, we can do 2 weeks, and then the commissioners have 2 weeks, and then they can move on, right?
Well, they can do whatever they want.
Right.
But
I'm saying 2 weeks, just 2 weeks more comment period enough, you think, for us? I would think.
So what do you think? We don't have any comments at all at this point,
right.
So I think 10 days.
Yep, I'm with that, 10 days. We don't need to stretch this out any further. If people have something to say, they could say it, and if they need to say it during the county commissioners meeting, they can do that, or hearing, I mean.
Okay, that answers your question. Okay, I'm done with my overview.
Any further comments? I need a motion to approve.
No.
Okay.
No, you open up the floor for public comment.
Okay. Anything else? Troy, anything?
I just want to say it looks like a very good job. A lot more detail than when we first went through it, and I like it.
Yep. I mean, they put a lot. I went to two or three of them. It was a pretty intense meeting at that. That's probably an understatement, right?
Oh yeah.
But they did. They actually took it seriously. That was a good thing.
Obviously.
Yeah. I mean, now the problem is they're talking about a couple of them want to try to figure out how to police the sign, or if there's going to be a permit process and that kind of stuff. Now, that would open up another can of worms, you know what I mean? But I think we can get through the process. I don't think that anybody, I don't know whether the commissioner do or not, have the stomach to try to police every sign in Garrett County, you know what I mean? But, and like, one of their requests was permitting the signs. We got to permit a yard sale sign, that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? So it's going to be stuff to work out yet, but this is a start, you know? A good start, but it's a start. Any other comments, concerns,
so we
complaints?
Making a motion to pass it down to the county commissioners, or we already did that? Just
you're opening up a comment period, so you wouldn't pass it down until you see if anything
we'll
else comes
vote
in.
On next time.
So we will vote on it the next time to pass.
So
it
what
to.
I'll do is push out a notification to the public that says that you have.
Okay.
You have opened a 10-day comment period.
There are no comments?
Hmm?
Can his motion
yes.
be automatically set up that if there are no comments over the next 10 days, that those
Yes.
Want to change your motion? There's no comments?
He suggests.
He didn't get a second.
No comments received in 10 days.
Okay, I got this.
Is that your motion?
Yeah.
Any second?
I'm going to move after the, I'm going to move to forward this new sign regulation to the county commissioners after the 10-day period of public comments is open and there are no comments. If there are no comments, then it automatically will be passed to the commissioners.
That sound legal enough, Liz?
Yes.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Timmy's second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? So moved, Deb.
Okay.
Okay. Is that it?
That's it.
All in, all done? See you next time. September 4th, right?
Great.
Okey-dokey. Troy, great seeing you, man.
Good. Good to be seen.
I just hope, when you turn the report into the commissioner, tell